Welcome to Deeply Disturbing Things,
the podcast.
I'm Macy.
And I'm Naomi.
And we're two professional counselors that like to talk about deeply disturbing things.
And this podcast is educational and entertaining.
Mostly entertaining.
Both in quotes.
Welcome.
Questionable.
All right, check-in time. What's been going on with you?
Well, let me consult my notes. I have two things I wrote down. One is apparently, you know, the laugh cry emoji that everybody uses all the time. Apparently, it's not in style and cool anymore.
Oh, that's good to know.
Gen Z decided that. So
I don't know who that is.
Generation Z.
Oh, the whole generation.
The whole generation.
I see.
So it'll have to be replaced with something
else. Is it because it was so cool that they couldn't handle it?
Well, maybe just cooler overused, than they are? You know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's fair.
That's one of my check-ins. What do you have?
One of my check-ins is actually also social media related. I got a poke from a random stranger on Facebook. Have you ever used or heard of the poke feature?
I have never in my life poked anyone. I have received many pokes that I have not responded to.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say I feel especially violated when I get poked on Facebook.
I feel it physically, like in the side of my belly. And like, why are you fucking poking me? I don't know you.
It's invasive and I need you to step away.
Or I do know you and then I'm especially grossed out that you're poking my belly.
Yeah. So that
they need to get rid of that feature. You're right. It is invasive.
Like, don't poke me. It feels pushy. Like, okay, you didn't even send me a message. We haven't talked in 6 months.
It's non-consensual.
And you poke me?
Yeah.
Who are you?
Exactly.
Don't poke me.
I didn't say poke me.
If somebody poked me in real life, I'd be really irritated. I don't know why that's a good label. Did you see that they're like having this big lawsuit struggle thing with Australia right now? And they're now blocking like Australian news sites.
I saw a little, I didn't like read past the headline, yeah. But I just saw something.
More
Facebook
drama.
Australia.
Yeah, drama.
I'm trying to find to show you on my Facebook that I have this disturbing collection of people that have sent me friend requests that I haven't.
I have a collection
accepted,
too.
And there's like so many really odd looking weird people.
I have a lot that I guiltily accept because I'm like, well, maybe I've met them somewhere.
I'm not on Facebook enough to know how to find that
and then,
freaking place.
And then they always message in a creepy way and say, hey, or how are you?
How do you find that area? Never mind. It'll appear again and I will remember and I will show you. But I have quite a long list because I've been on Facebook a long time.
Yeah. No. Okay. What's your second one?
My second one is I had a beauty ritual emergency a couple nights ago.
What does that mean?
Where I did a facial peel thing, which I've done many times with the same product, no problem. And this time I decided afterwards to put a new serum on after. And it was immediately like my face was burning and I thought I was going to have to go to the hospital. And I looked in the mirror and it was legit red. Like not just a little red, like you're hot, but like red, like painted myself.
Like you peeled off layers of your skin and poured acid on it.
I was
like,
terrified.
When you say serum, a lot of those have like the hydro acid in it to like burn.
Yeah, I think
face.
Whatever this new serum had was too much for my newly raw baby skin, and I was really deeply concerned. But I took a shower and then it was better.
That's good.
I was like, I'm either going to the ER or I'm posting my first TikTok video. I'm not sure yet.
That's not what I thought you started saying. So I'm glad. Thank you.
Those are my two TikTok, my two check-ins. That's my life.
Cool. I just wanted to give a quick shout out. We did change our time. We normally meet on Mondays for our live cast. And so we have our little crew that always shows up for our live cast. Thank you for following us here because I see Sherry in the room, Sachi, P-Dog, Naomi, that's you. But just so you know, we also have someone I don't recognize, Tron Cat.
Welcome, Tron Cat and Aggie Rubber. If that's how you pronounce that.
I'm not sure. So kudos to the new folks for being here and thanks for
we appreciate each and every one of you.
Thursdays are much better for us.
It's so much better for us because it's practically Friday.
Yeah, who cares how we end up tomorrow?
Exactly. I can get through it.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay, I get to go first today.
And I'm...
Whoop, whoop. Are you sad about it?
I'm sad, and I will get over it.
Okay. And I just have to add, Naomi got us these beverages that are blood orange spritzers, and she mislabeled them and said that they are...
Orange blood.
Yeah. She said, grab the orange blood out of the fridge. I didn't know what that meant, but it felt really graphic.
you found it.
I did, actually. Yes, I zeroed right in on it.
These are really good. These are from the grocery store.
Okay. It's going to be one of those days. So my topic today is OnlyFans.
What does that mean?
The OnlyFans website.
I don't know what that is.
What?
Teach me.
How do you really not know? I feel like you mentioned it before.
Well, I've forgotten if I had.
Okay. Okay. All right. And I'm curious if anyone else in the room, I mean, that you may not want to disclose this, but you can if you'd like. No judgment here. If you are aware of OnlyFans, at least.
I'm not saying no judgment over here. That was just Macy that said that.
Yes. This is Thirsty Thursday, Sherry. Welcome. Okay. You do know what that is, Sherry. Okay, good. So I'm talking about OnlyFans today because I watched a documentary on it and then I got interested and
tell me all about it.
Dived in. Okay, so OnlyFans is a subscription service. It's actually like based out of London, but it's really blown up. Content creators can earn money from users who subscribe to their content and they're called fans. So it's only your subscribers can access your content. So if you think about almost like an Instagram... more like an Instagram, but only the people who subscribe to you and pay money get access to your thread.
Okay.
So it is popular with sex workers, but also hosts content creators from other genres as well. But really, that's kind of the main focal point for it.
How do you spell it?
O-N-L-Y and fans.
Oh, only fans.
Only fans.
I thought you were saying Oni fans.
No, only.
Okay.
Fans.
Thought it was like a Japanese thing.
No. Based in London. Pretty not Japanese. Okay, yeah. So the content creators actually receive funding directly from their fans on a monthly basis, as well as one-time tips, and there's pay-per-view features. And it was actually really interesting because I had heard about OnlyFans before. But kind of in sideways jokes, people would say comments, but I didn't really know much about it. So the business model, it's a fan content creator can actually put out whatever they want. It is and can be pornography. It doesn't have to be, but it often is. The company pays 80% of the fees collected to the content creator, retaining the remaining 20%. After merchant and processing fees, the company share is around 12%. So a lot of people say that they're getting a bigger chunk of money than, for example, like Pornhub, who take like almost 30% or more, and can be very directive about what type of content they're looking for, where this can be very self-directed. Mm-hmm. So in the documentary that I watched, not like patrons, because we can have patrons here and it's different. just so you know. But yes, it's a paid for thing. So it was really interesting because there's like so much diversity of different body types, different types of things that people would do. What they focused on were the not like sexual stuff, but could be sexy.
Okay.
Yeah. Very body positive type of stuff for a lot of people.
I like that.
Yeah. So not stuck to one kind of stereotype. So this actually was launched in 2016 as a platform for performers to provide clips and photos to followers. The parent company, there's actually really little known about it. And the owner of this company is actually pretty, like, it's hard to find him. Like, he's pretty underground, pretty quiet. So OnlyFans introduced an extra safeguard into their account verification process so that a creator now has to provide a selfie headshot with their ID in the image in order to prove that the ID belongs to the account holder. So they're trying to like amp up
Security.
As of April 2020, OnlyFans was valued between $810 million and $936 million. Though estimates are difficult because they're only giving part of that data out. So there's about 200,000 new users every 24 hours. It's a lot. And 7,000 to 8,000 new creators joining every day.
So is the content, describe the content again. So there's porn, but what else is there?
There's also like some of the identified labels were like maybe cam girls who would like flirt or wear certain types of clothing. Like, so somebody can specifically, like one person said that she will make a fan feel extra special if they tip her a certain amount by maybe spending more quality time with them in a one-on-one video.
It's kind of like the old webcam.
Yeah.
Porny days of like the 90s and yeah. the early 2000s.
Except for they're paying you money in advance and you get to decide how much that costs in a very like structured way. And if you don't want to pay it, then that's fine.
So it's all sexy stuff.
Not all. So there are like graphic designer. They're trying to bring in more types of people. They have like comedians on there, different things where it's basically like specialized content that you don't get unless you subscribe. We could technically have a deeply disturbing things only fans. Yes. But with that comes the stigma at this point that it is associated with
porn
or showing sexual somethings. So just to speak of that a little bit. So have you heard of Bella Thorne?
No.
Okay. So she's like an actress of sorts, I guess. I'm not as familiar with her either, but she went on to OnlyFans and said that she was trying to promote it as like a positive way for like sex workers to like she's trying to like legitimize it basically with her celebrity. So she gets on there, but then there's this implied thing that she's going to show naked photos. So she in one day made $1 million in subscriptions.
And I've never even heard of this person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's her face.
Never have I seen her face.
Mm-hmm. What they said that they think what happened is a lot of people heard, oh, Bella Thorne is getting a OnlyFans page. She's going to show something. And so they thought,
get Nikki.
Yeah. But she never did.
Oh.
And she still has an OnlyFans page to this day. And it actually has rubbed a lot of the sex workers in a bad way because she's taking people who may subscribe to other people and taking the money that she doesn't need.
But wouldn't people cancel their subscriptions if they're not getting what it is they want?
Yeah, but if it's an actress and there's, she's never outright said that she won't. She just ends up not. She does a lot of swimsuit pictures, a lot of her in very scantily clad clothing, but never like fully goes more than that.
Well, maybe that's what the fans want, you know.
And so some people's response was, you know, leave her alone, who cares. But for the people that, because a lot of people came from actually the pornography industry to OnlyFans, and so for them, like, this is their job and how they make money, and they don't have the notoriety outside of that perhaps to get a big fan base, and they feel like she's stealing some of the fan base. That
sounds a little sour grapes to me.
I agree. Yeah. So she earned over $1 million in that first 24 hours of joining the platform and more than $2 million in less than a week. Her activities on OnlyFans sparked controversy, a lot of backlash. She promised nude photos for $200, but instead provided the scantily clad stuff, which gave a lot of kickback from people. But again, she still has them. I mean, they're not going anywhere.
All right.
Because they're her fans. So.
Yeah. I mean, they're her fans. It's their choice to spend their money on bikini shots.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So Pornography is allowed on the website. It's primarily used by pornographic models, but there are amateur and professionals as well. There's chefs, fitness enthusiasts, and musicians as well. You do have to be at least 18 to be on there. So one, like, kind of like a typical person who joined OnlyFans, it really kind of blew up right before COVID. And then COVID happened, and all of a sudden people are buying subscriptions online because they're home and they have time. So it really boomed during this period. And now it's kind of petering out. Like, there's a lot of saturation, like too many people. So the people that got in early have a lot of the followers. So this
So new people aren't joining, really.
Well, there's a lot of new people, but that's the problem, is there's too many new people. Like, it's...
I mean, subscribers. There aren't new subscribers joining. So there's not enough to go around.
Well, there's still a lot.
All of them.
There's still a lot. But if you think about, like, what they're seeing is how many viewers does that person already have? Like, their fame on OnlyFans may be telling about what they're willing to show, how personal. Like, if you send a request and offer, like, I'll pay this much, I don't know, to see you eat an ice cream cone, and that's cool with you, like, your number of subscribers will go up. So if you're a newer person, you don't have very many followers, you're probably harder to get new people.
Is there, like, a famous person that you would pay them to do something personal for you?
How personal?
I don't know. I don't know what their menu is.
It's whatever you want it to be for that person. Are there people that I wish would be on OnlyFans?
Sure. Who?
Oh, Josh Hartnett completely, but that was, like, crush way back in the day. My only celebrity crush I've ever had.
So Josh Hartnett eating an ice cream cone.
Sure.
What would that be worth to you?
If it was, like, and this is where OnlyFans, like, pays off, because as a viewer, my mind went, well, if it's just for me and he's eating it and, like, talking to me, I would pay more for that than if he was just posting a video of it on a stream. There you go.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Like, maybe $50. I don't know.
$50, that's it. I don't think Josh Hartnett's that cheap.
Oh, he's not. So one of the women who gave an interview shared that she made $100,000 in a month doing this. She started to do kind of intimate shots, and then kind of jumped all in and was able to quit her job, and that became her job. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people who came from just kind of typical backgrounds, regular jobs, and then they kind of found out I can make a lot of money doing this.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it lasts.
And that's
hope you know how to invest or have a backup plan.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of them have been talking about. Like, the way they phrase it, like, I'm just riding this ride for as long as it lasts. Cause it's either, you know, this could go down and not be popular anymore, or something else will come out, or this will become about, because their OnlyFans is going to take money from who gives it to them. So if it becomes so popular and other types of media come in, like, sex workers may not become the focal point anymore for it.
Mm-hmm. But that might be what's holding it back as well, is it is limiting people that might go there because of, you know,
for other reasons. Yeah. So this other person said that he was earning about $2,000 a month on streaming on Twitch, which is, like, a popular gaming platform. And then he just said it wasn't sustainable, and then he switched over to OnlyFans, and then was able to get 43,000 followers there. I mean, that's a lot of people. And they only take a flat rate of 20% no matter how much your income is on it. So it doesn't fluctuate and get bigger than that. So one person said, it was just crazy. I'd never had more than a couple thousand dollars in my bank account at one time in my entire life. I was able to pay off all my credit cards. So, quick money bucket.
The allure of easy money has a very strong appeal.
Yeah. And like one of the guys, he's like, I really want to be a fitness trainer, like really buff dude. He's like, I want to be a fitness trainer. And that's like what I want to eventually do. But for now, like I take interesting photos of, he called them almost nudes, like where, you know, things would be blocking things. But he said like his number one biggest photo was him brushing his teeth in an almost nude photo in the mirror. And he's like, it's crazy that I can do that and make money off of it.
I mean, that almost seems like very artsy.
Yeah. And a lot of them. It also
reminds me of Tobias from Arrested Development.
I was just watching that today. Yeah. So, I mean, and a lot of them are very creative. I mean, they take it seriously like a job, and they do have to get creative for fans because fans want new. I mean, you can't be boring or they won't subscribe to you.
All right. Gotta keep it fresh. Yeah. Keep evolving.
He did say there's only so many ways and places to wear underwear. And so when that time runs out, when he feels like he's done all those things, then he will go to be a fitness coach, which is fair. Most of the ones I saw were like more like creative, like you could tell that they're having fun with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to make their own content.
Oh my God, we should totally do one. Not nude, almost nude.
Sherry just said I would pay a decent amount to see Jack White play songs in a ball gown.
See,
like, and that's kind of the fun part is like you can get creative and like think about what would I pay to see?
Yeah.
Let's see your creative juices start flowing because it may not even be sexual. Like it may.
I'm thinking of famous bands. Like,
yeah,
if they were just doing a little ditty just for me.
Yeah, like, would you, ooh, like,
that'd be hot.
Sing 2 minutes of a song to me. That's a long time. 1 minute of a song to me.
I would take 30 seconds of Flea.
30 seconds.
A Flea in his underwear. I would take it. But he's always in his underwear. So that's it's not a sexual thing with Flea.
No, that's just his approach. Outfit. Exactly.
It's his identity.
Yeah.
I just don't think he owns clothes.
Yeah. I wish there was, like, a backwards button to this, too, where, like, you could pay them not to do something. Ooh. Like, where if you have enough status or money, I guess maybe like somebody makes a request and they start to do it, and then you can like veto and then just like wipe out the other person's request. This could
take a very interesting turn if somebody's very rich and powerful and ends up owning a person basically and control every aspect of their life.
That's a Twitch thing. Like, you have different levels where, like, they build up points. And one of the things you can set up is where they can time out another user and make it where they can't access it for a period of time. Or you can, like, ban a moderator for 15 minutes. Just so you can get really creative with it.
Like, what if somebody just wanted to own you and just have you film every second of your day and they tell you exactly what to do or what not to do?
Yeah, I mean, that is a sugar daddy.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, the whole
point, or mama.
Yeah, the whole point of it is that it's up to the artist. It's up to the performer. So they could
But
choose.
Is it?
Well, there's the peer pressure from the people that I saw, like it's so voluntary and they enjoy being kind of a focal point.
Well, I can see you getting addicted to the easy
attention.
Money.
Too,
and the attention and feeling like, you know, just like people that post stupid photos on Instagram that are life-threatening, like where you feel like you always have to up the ante to keep the attention and the money coming. Like maybe you start out with almost nudes and the next day you're running down the street naked.
Well, and that's one of the women was talking, and she was talking about how it all started with she posted like her booty, and she has a very large booty in a good way. And so she posted a picture of herself in underwear of a booty shot, and it did so well, it kind of projected off. But by the end of the show, she was talking about how like she like had a threesome on a video and had it like a subscription only, like people could purchase the video, and she made like $8,000 off of that threesome video.
Innocent booty shot one day, next day you're doing a threesome. I mean, you can see it. A booty shot's a gateway drug.
Is you literally have a picture of your derby booty above your bed.
Yes, Macy's sitting 3 feet away from a booty shot.
Gateway drug.
We won't say what happened after that.
Good. So that kind of attention to marketing is what can make an OnlyFans performer truly thrive, though. One person said, I think fundamentally it's the non-sex parts of online sex work that make someone succeed or fail, which is counterintuitive to a lot of people. So making good content's important, but good content without good marketing won't get you anywhere, just like everything else online. So it's the marketing piece, the engagement with their consumers, and the in-between that they're saying is really important. Gotta do the work. That's what she's like, at a certain point, I had to quit my job because I couldn't keep up with, like, they get messages all the time from people, and trying to stay engaged with your audience takes a lot of time and effort. You know, just like we know, we have such a big audience.
So much work.
So much work. Okay, yeah. She, another person said that, research suggests that fully half of OnlyFans, more than 1 million creators net, no more than $100 a month. So there's many people who aren't making money on it because it's so saturated and they don't do the things in between and the marketing and all of that.
I feel like there's other free platforms, though, that are going to be major competition for this site where people can get it for free.
Yeah, but it comes down to what the, if the sex workers go to a platform and that's where everybody's at, then, I mean, they're the ones fueling the platform. Because if they get paid more than on this site than doing it on Pornhub, then Pornhub's going to start losing people, in theory.
Maybe YouTube needs to start a porn channel.
Probably a bad idea. So earning $750 puts you in the top 10%. Given the stigma against sex work, it seems there is a very large pool of people at the bottom of OnlyFans income pyramid who are entering that risky sex world where there's also a lot of inequality. We're being perfect and being that 1% up in the top is really hard to achieve. So there can be a lot of damage to people's self-esteem and confidence because they're trying really, really hard. But I mean, statistically, the odds are against them if they're new and don't have some notoriety of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's just like any Instagram or anything, you know, it's hard to get the likes.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that there's anything bad or wrong about you. It's just...
No, and sometimes it's just the luck of the draw of algorithms.
Yeah.
And money. You know, if you have money, you can get those fake follows. You can pay for follows.
So this other person said that I want to save up enough in a couple of years and then never have to work again if I don't want to. So you can see some people kind of viewing it as that, like, here's my out.
I have no judgment. If you're not hurting yourself or other people and you can sleep at night and gotta make a dollar, gotta put food on the table.
When you can see like how it ties in with their goals, which makes sense. Like this person wants to buy land and build something on it. Like, so it's like a means to an end for a lot of people. They're calling this like porn's great equalizer because in-person work like escorting and dominatrixing became too risky for a lot of clients and workers during COVID. But sex workers were cut off from most forms of public support, even if their labor was legal. Federal law barred those who work is of purient sexual nature from receiving PPP loans, so they couldn't get any of those. Among those who pivoted to OnlyFans was Cinnamon Love, a 46-year-old Brooklyn-based sex industry veteran who held almost every job in the adult world imaginable. When the pandemic hit, she was working in an online porn and as a freelance professional dominatrix catering to in-person clients. But she had to shift over because of COVID, and ended up earning $61,000 on the platform last year.
Go Cinnamon.
Yeah, Cinnamon with an S.
Oh, Cinnamon. Cinnamon.
Yeah, you get it now?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. They also said that this is allowing people to make content on their terms with the people they want to perform with the fans they want to interact with, and on timelines that they want to do it, where they reap the most of the benefits. So there's a lot of good things, especially I think in the sex worker world, but I am worried as well that it's going to become just like another social media platform where is this OnlyFans in? Was mm-hmm. through sex and pornography, and now they're branching out to these other categories, and then that's going to kind of go away.
We'll see. Stay posted. See.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stigma though for people. You mentioned cam girls. Those were a thing, still are. But what do you think like some of the stigma around that would be?
Now or back then?
I think both.
Stigma? Well, I mean, I think society in general stigmatizes any kind of sex work for moral reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally, but I know a large part of society does.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason that the term has switched from prostitution to sex work is to legitimize it as mm-hmm. work.
Yeah. There's another man in the industry who shared that he finds OnlyFans refreshing because he's actually the focus for once. I feel most of the time in my in-person performing, I'm mostly kind of an extra or an afterthought. They usually cast the other performer or other performers and then me. But this is really a perception shift where he becomes the center. And in the Netflix thing, I saw society image-wise met societal standards of hot guy, hot girl. But there was a really good mix in there too of different types of body images. And I think that was really good to see actually. Yeah. So I was just wondering if you had an OnlyFans is really my way of asking you.
I don't. I hadn't even heard of it. So
yeah.
Thank you for enlightening me.
Yeah. I don't have OnlyFans either.
I think that where sex work is not all great is when people are forced into it,
mm-hmm.
Or there's violence involved, mm-hmm. you know. But for those that, you know, are basically giving informed consent,
yeah,
you know, and they're because they want to be there and it's a healthy choice for them, then go.
Yeah, if somebody wants to pay me $25 to watch me eat white cheddar popcorn. Sure.
Is that going to be your OnlyFans?
White cheddar popcorn eating?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, people on Instagram and TikTok, like, they just eat stuff, and like, that's all they do, and they have huge fan base. It's so weird.
No, I'm kidding. Or deeply disturbing one would just be, we'd be so awkward. We wouldn't even know what to, like.
No, it would take us 5 hours just to get one photo. We take a photo every podcast night, and it's like a half hour event.
It
takes way too long to get one.
I don't think it's our
really bad photo.
I don't think it's our industry. But
you mean modeling and photography is not our industry?
Modeling, photography, sex work in general.
All right, is it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn. That's all I got. Okay. I'll keep you posted about OnlyFans if it's like changes or goes away or whatever.
So I'm doing a part two tonight.
Yes.
My first two-part or multi-part thing. And so last week I did the murder of Tupac Shakur. And tonight I am doing The Murder of Biggie Smalls, but they're both interwoven. So I'll be also talking about Tupac tonight as well. And this is all new information for me. I knew like a few little things, but you know, this isn't my world.
Yeah, and I didn't know much about it.
I've really learned so much diving into this, and it's actually inspired me for some future topics as well. It's like, oh, I want to learn more about that. You know, I start on one webpage, and then I have 20 tabs open five minutes
later. OnlyFans, that was me too.
So I have a lot to present. I really couldn't pare it down anymore because there's so much here. It's very complicated. And at some point, I had just had to stop. I had to stop researching because every time I researched more, I would learn more and I wanted to put it in. And eventually I'm like, okay, this is already many pages longer than I
have usually time have. For.
So, yeah.
I'm glad I went first so I could get my time in.
Yeah. So who knows? This may be part three as well if this just takes too long. Okay. I have to start with my little musical interlude.
Big Papa.
So that is one of my favorite Biggie Small songs. So musically, I'm more of a Biggie fan than Tupac fan. I mean, really, the only Tupac song I know is that California Love song. Hmm. But there's lots of Biggie songs on my playlist. So let's recap from last time. So Tupac Shakur, prominent rap artist, died on September 13th, 1996, after being shot several times in Las Vegas. The crime has never been solved, though there have been strong assumptions Southside Crips members, including Keffi D and his nephew Orlando Anderson, were involved. In 2009, Keffi D began speaking to investigators about his involvement and what he knew, and he made like a deal. In 2018, he began speaking out publicly, and then he even published a book in 2019 called Compton Street Legend, where you can read all about it. So Tupac had been signed with Suge Knight's Death Row Records. This was a West Coast label, and this was during the big East Coast-West Coast rivalry in the 90s. So the other side was Sean Puffy Combs' Bad Boy Records. So Suge Knight of Death Row Records on the West side ends up going to prison on a parole violation stemming from his part in the attack on Orlando Anderson in the MGM Grand Hotel during the night of the Mike Tyson fight and the night that Tupac is shot.
I'm glad that you're doing the recap for me. It's helpful.
It's helpful for me too. Yeah, okay. So after Tupac is murdered and Suge Knight is in jail, Biggie, or Notorious B.I.G., who's born Christopher Wallace, and his junior mafia entourage, they come out to L.A. to shoot and produce his album. And so some say they really had a false sense of security and don't realize what they're stepping into. So remember that a gang war had started between the Southside Crips and the mob Piru Bloods as a result of Tupac's shooting. And in the days after this war was declared, several people were shot and killed, and many, many were shot and wounded. And so this is the environment that, you know, Biggie's coming into. And some say if Biggie had never come out to LA, he'd still be alive. So here we are, six months later, after Tupac is shot, on March 7th in 1997, Biggie and Puffy are in L.A. to attend the Soul Train Awards to present the award for Best Female R&B Soul Single. They're met with cheers and booing and shouts of West Side. Backstage, there's a confrontation between the Bad Boy security detail and the Fruit of Islam. So I had to look that up because I didn't know who the Fruit of Islam were. So per Wikipedia, this is the security and disciplinary wing of the Nation of Islam. And it has also been described as a paramilitary wing. So they wear distinctive blue or white uniforms and caps on their head.
No uniform is complete without a cap.
So there was conversation around the Fruit disrespecting their brothers in the East in reference to Bad Boy Records. So Puffy looks at Mustafa Farrakhan, who's the son of the Nation of Islam leader, and says, "We're cool, right?" And then so it was settled. So this is the day before Biggie is shot. So this is some of the stuff leading up. So the next day, Biggie's last day alive, Biggie and Puffy go to a party at the Peterson Auto Museum, and this is put on by Vibe magazine. The party eventually goes out of control because twice as many people show up as expected. There's lots of celebrities there. Chris Tucker, Missy Elliott, the Wayan brothers, Whitney Houston, who we talked about a few episodes ago. And side note, I learned after that episode that Paul had a crush on Whitney Houston.
What?
And used to really enjoy watching her I Want to Dance with Somebody video.
Aw, P-Dog.
And he didn't watch it for the music, apparently.
Oh. Now I don't feel bad about your OnlyFans comment.
So the inside of this place is packed. The outside is all these people that want to get in. Among them, lots of known gang members. Inside the party, Biggie's new hit, Hypnotize, is just playing over and over. So just like Tupac in Vegas, Biggie is on top of the world. At midnight, the LAPD responds to calls by the fire marshal to shut down the party because of overcrowding. So things were getting really rowdy and shots were being fired. At 12:05, there are reports of shots fired on the corner of 8th and Orange Grove, which is on the southeast corner of the Peterson Auto Museum. And there is a description of a black Ford Bronco fleeing the area. And so people think this was a diversion in the conspiracy to kill Biggie to get the cops focused on this other incident. So then Biggie and Puffy are ready to leave the party, and they wait in the parking lot for their vehicles to be brought around. And of course, they have their entourage with them. This is the culture. You know, you don't just go anywhere alone. You have your peeps.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the entourage notices a suspicious person across the parking lot, mad dogging them, he said. So that means, like, you know, giving you a mean look. Puffy's. Well, because he has all these names.
Are we going to get a shot over this?
Diddy. Puffy's bodyguard, Eugene Deal, notices another suspicious looking individual. He sees a guy dressed like the Nation of Islam with that blue suit on, the white shirt, the blue bow tie, a black guy. So just before pulling away, Biggie is sitting in the front seat talking to his friend who was standing just outside the window. And they're just celebrating. And his friend's like, "We're back, Biggie, we're back." And Biggie then says his last words, "We'll see you at the next party." And here's the last photo of Biggie alive. And there he is with Puffy. Biggie's the one on the left.
I assume so, but next to Piffy.
God, I really don't want to get shot. It's a mistake. Too many vowels, too many P's and D's. All right. So in this entourage of Biggie's, there's three SUVs. There's the first one, a green Suburban, and Puffy was in the front passenger seat. And in the back were the bodyguards, including that Eugene Deal. And the second SUV was another green Suburban, and this was driven by G Money Young. And Biggie was in the front passenger seat. In the back was his cousin Lil C's and two others. And then in the last SUV, a black Chevy Blazer was driven by Inglewood school police officer Reggie Blaylock. And in the passenger seat was bad boy head of security, Paul Offord. So followed up by security. So Biggie's in the middle, you know, like they do with the president, like they have it all surrounded. So as the first SUV pulled away, they're looking over their shoulders, waiting for Biggie to finish getting into his Suburban. And then the third SUV is waiting for Biggie. And this one is blocking traffic, so Biggie's SUV can pull out in front of them. And then at that moment, a white SUV pulls in front of the third SUV, the security one, momentarily cutting off the security from Biggie. And so seeing that, the driver of the black SUV lunges his vehicle forward, cutting off the white SUV from the caravan. So a lot of people theorize that this white SUV was involved in the shooting, because then it takes off.
Yeah, yeah. A little suspicious.
Yeah. And somebody that maybe understood how this entourage business works with the caravans and where Biggie would be
knew his whole getup.
Like, he probably wouldn't be in that last one. He probably wouldn't be in the first one. He'd probably be in the middle. So as this is happening, a dark, newer model Chevy Impala pulls up on the right side of Biggie's vehicle, and the driver begins firing into Biggie's door. The shooter was described as an African-American male. He was seen holding a semi-automatic pistol across his body with his left hand on the steering wheel. So it's like that.
That's going to be hard to drive and shoot.
Well, I don't know if the car was going very fast. So
I still feel, like that's... Because would you steer with your non-dominant hand?
Well, you're just holding on with the left hand.
So non-dominant, probably. I mean, you're probably not,
like, turning, making turns. You're just, like, holding for a second and then leaning across.
Because you definitely wouldn't shoot with your non-dominant hand. So this person was right-handed. We're solving the mystery.
Basically, just solved it.
Yes.
We're looking for a right-handed individual. Yeah, because if you're left-handed, you would just hold on with the right, shoot out with the left.
Right? We should do this for a living.
We should. Why isn't anyone paying us at this point, almost 100 episodes in? Why have we not had one sponsorship offer?
I have to say,
what are we doing wrong?
We've had so many insightful moments where we probably just solved all the things.
All the things. So after firing his weapon, the shooter makes a quick right onto Wilshire Boulevard. The security team and the Blazer, they attempt to chase him down, but the Impala gets away. So that's very similar to what happened with Tupac.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the mob Piru Bloods attempted to chase them down, but they got away. So meanwhile, Biggie's vehicle comes to a stop, and Puffy's vehicle makes a U-turn to come back to see what's happened. Puffy runs to Biggie's door and sees that he's been shot. He opens the door, but Biggie is not responsive. And it takes him 5 minutes to drive to Cedars-Sinai Hospital. I did listen to the 911 calls that were coming from multiple people in the caravan, and it was just like chaos and confusion and distress. And the 911 person wanted them to pull over so an ambulance could come to them. And they're like, no, we're not stopping. There's no way we're stopping, which I get. Like, if I was taking a loved one to the hospital and they're dying, I wouldn't stop either.
Yeah, no, I'm going to the hospital.
Yeah.
They're already in my car.
At 1:15 a.m., doctors notify Puffy and Biggie's wife, singer Faith Evans, that Biggie Smalls is dead. Oh. They say he likely died within moments of being shot, so he didn't suffer.
Yeah.
He'd been shot 4 times. The fatal shot entered his torso at an upward trajectory, hitting his heart and lungs. And he was only 24 years old.
Oh, he's young.
Yeah, so Tupac, 25, Biggie, 24, both shot and killed within 6 months of each other. So the next day, Biggie's death hit the news. Everybody's naturally connecting it to Tupac's death. There were more than 100 witnesses because this happened right in the public.
Again, similar to Tupac.
But no arrests were made and there were no official suspects.
Is this the shitty PI work again?
Well, just wait. I'm about to get into it. And I started getting too into it. That's why I had to stop, because I'm like, okay.
Have some late night YouTube in?
I'm not writing a 200-page document here. But it's very interesting, and I kept wanting to know more and more and more and get through the layers. So Biggie's album, which is very interestingly and kind of creepily named Life After Death, was released posthumously 1 week later and immediately sold 10 million copies. Biggie's death was initially investigated by a detective named Russell Poole from the LAPD. He developed a theory that dirty LA cops working for Suge Knight had murdered Biggie Smalls.
What?
This theory specifically pointed to cops named David Mack and Amir Mohammed. But then Russell Poole was transferred off the case, which adds to people's suspicions of a cover-up.
Super sus, man.
And then he resigned from the force in 1999. So he collaborated on a couple projects around this, a book and a documentary. And so those projects really helped his theories become widely accepted. So it's very widely accepted that this was a police cover-up. And so based on this theory, Biggie's mother filed a wrongful death lawsuit. The damages, if one, would have been $400 million. That's a big lawsuit against the LAPD. And it was estimated that would have been the amount of money Biggie would have made if he would have remained alive. So then on May 1st, in 2006, an investigator, Greg Kading, who also made a Biggie and Tupac documentary, he joined the cold case murder investigation. The theory that police officers David Mack and Amir Mohammed had killed Biggie was quickly dismissed. He quickly dismissed this.
Why?
Well, let's get into it. And interestingly, another sidebar, I just binge watched that Cecil Hotel about Elisa Lam. And he is one of the main investigators that gives commentary.
What?
I'm like, there you are, Greg Kading. I see you.
Maybe we can get him to come onto our podcast.
Maybe we could. He seems to like to talk.
I bet you we could.
Should I reach out?
I think you should. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I entirely trust him, though, after my research. We'll see.
We don't have to trust him. We just got to open it up for our viewers to make up their minds.
That's right. So Greg Kading's on the case, the cold case. This is mid-2000s now, on a decade after. And so this is stuff that he was doing. So Eugene Deal, remember Biggie's bodyguard, speculated the shooter was the Nation of Islam individual seen at the parking lot of the museum. And there's sketch drawings that show somebody actually with a bow tie. That I think come from Eugene's witnessing that. Another suspect was Trevon Lane, the death row employee. And it was widely believed that the fight at the MGM Grand Hotel on the night of Tupac's murder was in retaliation for the beating Trevon got at the mall. Remember when Orlando stole his death row records medallion? And that then the murder of Tupac was in retaliation for the fight. But when Trevon was interviewed, he provided no information, sticking to the street code. Michael Duro was interviewed next. He was the sole survivor in the incident where Orlando Anderson, remember one of the people that were in the car that shot up Tupac. So he was the sole survivor in the incident where Orlando and two others were killed, and he was serving a life sentence in prison. And he told investigators that Suge Knight had hired the Southside Crips to kill Biggie Smalls. However, Greg Kading discovered that this was part of a scheme to get moved to a less secure prison in exchange for information, so his story was discounted. There's another potential witness, but he didn't cooperate.
So why did the police thing go out the window?
Well, he just quickly dismissed it.
So there was no, like,
reason. Well, he had some reasoning, but it was like, he's really good at, like, saying, this is why, this is why, this is why, but, like, very quickly. Like, he was even doing that in that Cecil Hotel thing.
I haven't watched that yet.
Just basically blaming people for thinking things other than the truth, you know, because they just don't know all the information, and this is exactly what happened. It's very, like, this is, I'm the authority, and this is really what happened.
Do you know what I think about authority? Suck it. I'm my own authority, sir. Give me the facts and let me decide.
That's right.
Psh, I don't like him.
Question everything.
He's no longer.
Question authority.
He's no longer invited to the podcast.
So the last witness looked at was Keffi D. So remember Keffi D. He was an OG member of the Southside Crips gang and the uncle of Orlando Anderson. He was in Las Vegas when Tupac was shot and also was at that party at the Peterson Museum the night Biggie was shot. He had access to a Chevy Impala.
Convenient.
There was a rumor that Bad Boy Records owed the Southside Crips $1 million.
Dang, that's OnlyFans money.
As payment for the hit on Tupac. According to this theory, the Southside Crips had killed Biggie because they had not been paid. So, sounds sensible. Keffi D was compelled to cooperate with Greg Kading when one of his drug couriers flipped to avoid drug charges. And the drug courier helped set up Keffi D in a sting involving PCP and cocaine. So, the investigators really worked on the sting for months because they wanted a life sentence to hold over Keffi's head. And Keffi's close family members were also involved in drug charges, so he made the decision to cooperate to save them as well. So Keffi started talking back in the mid-2000s.
But Sherry has a good point here as part of our PI team. She's saying, but dead men can't pay money, though.
Well, can't squeeze blood from a turnip, they say.
Your orange blood can only be squeezed when it's...
Can't squeeze blood from an orange, or can you?
I just can't.
So Keffi D was asked to share everything he knew about the murder of Biggie Smalls. So here's what he said. He said, on the day Biggie was killed, Puffy had invited him to the Vibe party. At the party, Keffi approached Biggie and Puffy to say, what's up? And when Biggie's security tried to intervene, Biggie said, it's cool, I know him. And then this information is corroborated by several close to Biggie at the party. So it's been corroborated that Keffi and Biggie did know each other. Keffi offered extra security, but Puffy declined. So gang members did security detail, you know, for Death Row Records and Bad Boy Records performers. So that was the thing that happened. So Puffy didn't want it. So maybe that was because he didn't want to be seen publicly with these gang members. But Keffi's instincts were telling him something was about to go down. So he warns Puffy that there are Death Row personnel and blood gang members at the party. So Keffi denied involvement in the Biggie Smalls murder. So he's spilling all this information. You know, he has this life sentence over him. And so he says, that wasn't us.
Okay.
So what was them? So here's Keffi. So with this deal, everything he says can't be held against him. So he has no reason to hold back. So in 2009, Keffi shared with the investigation carried out by Greg Kading what he knew about the murder of Tupac. And he said, a decade earlier, Keffi had told the FBI that he had told Orlando not to retaliate on the fight. And he had also told them he thought Suge Knight was behind the killing because Tupac was planning on leaving Death Row Records. So he told a bunch of lies earlier, a decade earlier. Mm-hmm. But now he's telling the truth, maybe. I put it in quotes because you never know. And so a good point was made by one of Suge's personnel that if Suge wanted to control Tupac, he could have had him imprisoned again, because Tupac basically owned the lawyer that was working on his appeal. So remember, that's how mm-hmm. Tupac signed with Death Row in the first place, is he got him out of jail.
Yeah,
prison.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, what's the benefit of killing somebody for money? I mean, like, you don't get that money back. You may as well have him perform for you.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, unless he was going to go to a different record label, and then maybe that would be a threat.
I could see it being like retaliation, in the sense of like, you made me look bad and now I have to retaliate. But it seems like everything they're saying is like about money. And I don't see how this equates to fixing that problem.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a good motive.
No, I think they're smarter than that. I think there's these police guys involved somehow.
Well, just wait.
Oh, good.
So Keffi filled in the backstory of how he knew Puffy Combs. He said he had met him through a drug dealer named Zip, who was from New York, and that Puffy had used Keffi's 64 Chevy in one of his videos. And so they had this connection. Puffy denied knowing Keffi D or hiring Southside for security, but all the key insiders said it was true. So Puffy, this drug dealer Zip, and Keffi D apparently knew each other really well. And Keffi D was the main point of contact between Bad Boy Records and the Crips. So investigators asked Keffi about when he talked to Puffy about murdering Tupac. Keffi told investigators they had wanted $1 million to kill Tupac. He said Puffy was the one who came up with the amount. He told Keffi he'd give them anything for the dude's heads, so multiple. Referring to Suge Knight as well, mm-hmm. I assume. A Southside Crips informant had told investigators that there was a $1 million contract on Tupac by Puffy. And this was 10 years before Keffi D ever disclosed the information. So it sort of fits.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what Keffi says happened in the weekend before Tupac's murder. Keffi D ate at Greenblatt's Deli in L.A., which was apparently a popular hangout for the Crips.
Tasty.
Got to get your Reuben and your matzo ball soups.
Mm, what's a matzo ball soup? Sounds delicious.
He then caravanned to Las Vegas with his crew, including Zip, this drug dealer from New York. The day of the fight, with the Mike Tyson fight, Orlando Anderson, Terrence Brown, and DeAndre Smith all drive out to Las Vegas to meet Keffi D, and they're driving a rented white Cadillac. Remember, that's the car
that cut him off.
Shooters. No, that's the Biggie thing.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you're talking
Tupac.
Cadillac.
Yeah, okay, so the white Cadillac's the one that pulled up next to Tupac, and shot nine times.
At the red light.
Yes.
Okay, remember, got it.
Good.
I'm bringing it back.
And he was saying that you always go with a rental car when doing crime, which I'm like, words of wisdom. I will take that with me.
I don't think I would have thought of that on my own, to be honest.
Yeah. So now I know when I'm doing crime, always go with a rental car.
Yeah, fair.
The night of the fight, remember, Tupac attacks Orlando, not knowing this is the guy who was hired to freaking kill him.
Dang.
On a $1 million contract.
Wow. Okay.
In interviews 10 years prior, Keffi had, you know, said he lied and told people that he had calmed Orlando down after this incident and told him not to retaliate. But now in this most recent interview, 10 years after that, he said they immediately planned a retaliation, which makes more sense.
That does make more sense.
I mean, with the lifestyle.
It's not a like, you know, let it go, man.
No, I know. I don't think he was like, come on, let's just breathe, let's Orlando.
Take some deep breaths.
Calm your chi.
Let's recenter and think about the consequences.
Yeah, I don't think that was happening. And Zip said, hey, this is the perfect time to take care of that thing. You know, because you don't say it out loud. You have a thing.
Yeah.
And Keffi claims they actually hadn't gone to Vegas with this purpose in mind. They were there to watch the fights. And they didn't even bring any pistols or anything with them. Isn't this fucked up?
Yeah. Wow.
So then Zip offers Keffi D a 40 Glock that he had in his car. Like, oh.
Oh, hey, by the way.
Yeah, because, you know, Zip's going to always travel with the weapons. The thing.
Can we add a wink to it? Like, the thing. Wink.
Well, I don't know if these gangsters are winking. Maybe they're winking. I don't know.
Remember that thing?
The thing.
It's essential.
I would add a wink, but I'm not cool.
Sorry for everyone that can't see us winking at each other.
Yeah, it's really a lot of winking happening. We're so not sexy.
What's your wink dominant eye? Because mine's my left.
Oh, I'm doing my right. Yeah.
My right feels odd.
Like sometimes I just do both and just make it a blink.
My right one, I kind of, it's more like a wince.
That's good. Okay, so Keffi D says that then half a dozen other Crips members get into two vehicles and they drive directly to the 662 Club because they know Tupac's going to be performing because there's flyers everywhere that says
he's Tupac not a hidden guy
at the 662.
Kind of famous.
So they lie in the wait in the parking lot, but then they get tired of waiting and head to the liquor store. Because remember, Suge gets pulled over for, like, too loud music or no license plate or both.
Probably both.
So they get bored. They go to the liquor store to get their drink, and then they're going to go drive around and find Tupac. And so in this white Cadillac, driver Terrence Brown, Keffi D in the front passenger seat. Behind the driver is DeAndre Smith. And then in the rear passenger seat is Orlando Anderson. And so Keffi says that he saw a girl shouting out, Tupac, Tupac. So they swung a U-turn. Because they wouldn't have known.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going on the opposite way. So Tupac's coming this way. They're going on the other side. So they hear these girls shouting that, and they're like, oh, there he is. And they said Tupac was actually kind of hanging out of the car, like waving and stuff, talking to the girls. And so they flip a bitch and pull up on the right side of the Tupac's car. Keffi said if they had pulled up on his side, then he would have blasted, but it was not on his side. So he reached back to give the weapon to DeAndre, who was in the best position to shoot, but DeAndre resisted. So Orlando said to give the weapon to him. And according to Keffi, it was Orlando Anderson who reached across DeAndre and began shooting into the BMW. Mm. So this is Keffi calling out his own nephew.
Yeah.
In one of the most notorious murders of all time.
Well, and that kind of aids to that why it was so hard to solve when it was kind of random that they decided to do it. Like, there's no backstory or planning to, like, dig into.
And nobody was talking either because the street code. Like, nobody was saying anything. Mm-hmm. And then witnesses were dead.
That's crazy.
So Keffi said he looked over and Suge saw him. Like, there was definitely eye contact and recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Suge said he didn't see who was in the car at all?
Code. So I'm learning the code.
There's the code. Keffi said he thought Suge was dead due to getting hit in the head, like he saw blood come out of his head, actually.
Yeah.
But it was just shrapnel.
I don't want to be hit in the head by anything.
And he wasn't incapacitated at all. Like, he could move and talk and everything.
Mm.
So here's Keffi identifying his own nephew as the killer of Tupac Shakur. So I just want to remind everybody, though, that this is still an unsolved murder.
Tell me how.
I don't know.
Wait.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, but I don't know.
Don't leave me cliffhanger.
I mean, I'll tell you, but I won't tell you.
Like, tell me.
Because I don't know.
I need more.
Okay. I told you this is a lot to take in. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of moving pieces. That's why I had to just stop researching and say, okay, this is enough for now. Because the more you get into it, the more you get into it.
Well, because the police being paid off doesn't tie into this.
Well, okay, so let me circle
back. All right.
Let me wrap up Tupac.
You do you.
So Keffi said after they had parked the Cadillac, they put the gun on the tire. They just put it on the tire, you know, outside on the car. And then they were heading to smoke weed and party.
Gosh, to be so casual.
It's so, yeah, cold-blooded.
It's just in the culture.
It's the culture, yeah.
Yeah.
Then Suge Knight.
Wouldn't even go to a party where I thought, like somebody would even have a gun.
I mean, if this wasn't real people's lives, like, this whole thing is like a comedy of errors. Yeah. So listen to this part. So they park the Cadillac, put the gun down. They're going to go smoke weed and party. And then right where they happen to be at, Suge Knight pulls up. Because remember, he was driving like a bat out of hell, busted up tires, trying to escape from who we thought maybe chasing them.
Yeah.
He pulls up right in front of these four dudes. Stops the car. Like, the car's finally like not going anymore. And so here's Suge Knight, Tupac, mortally wounded, and they pull right up in front of him where they're standing there right in the middle of the strip. And Keffy D's just thought it was hilarious. And if it was a fiction, it would be comical. Like, it's dark comedy for sure, but
yeah,
it's real people.
Just that, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine, though? I mean, it's just
well, and the fact that they just, like, watched it and laughed.
Yeah, exactly. Rude. After Tupac's death, Compton police immediately suspected Orlando was involved because of their informants, and they even arrested Orlando, but the Las Vegas police didn't have any evidence because there's no witnesses, and nobody's talking. 6 weeks after Tupac's death, Keffy hadn't been paid the $1 million by Puffy. Apparently, Zip was paid $500K by Puffy to pass along, but it never made it to Keffy. And then Puffy and Zip fell out over this.
So he didn't get paid for it.
So he didn't get paid, yeah. All right, let me take a sip.
Whew. I've been sipping.
I got a sip.
This stresses me out because
it's stressful, yeah.
It's so long ago, too. There's literally nothing we can do, but...
Well, it could be, like, officially solved. That would be nice.
By us. I'm waiting for the ending so then we can just solve it for everybody. Okay.
So let's go back to who killed Biggie.
Who did?
So Keffy D and the Southside Crips were ruled out by Greg Kading, the investigator. So that left the theory that Suge had hired the mob Piru Bloods to kill Biggie Smalls. So... Remember, Suge went to prison on a parole violation for his part in the fight in the lobby about the necklace.
The necklace.
Yeah. And so Death Row Records began to crumble with Suge in prison. And additionally, people started to die. So several of Suge's bodyguards and a close friend named Poochie were killed. Poochie had been shot in the back. The thing I looked at said 10 times. I don't know if it was actually 10 times. That's a lot of damn times to be shot in the back while riding your motorcycle in Compton.
10 too many.
Maybe that happened. It just like, damn, that's a lot of times. So Poochie is dead.
As dead as it gets.
And 10 years after Tupac's death, Suge Knight is a former shadow of himself. And so... Greg Kading turns to Suge's girlfriend, Teresa, who, has one of Suge's kids, had a kid with him. So turns to her for information. They had, you know, some charge on her. And so it was kind of the same thing they had done with Keffy, where, hey, you tell us information, we can't use it against you, and you'll get off this charge thing.
Yeah, and they just wanted it solved.
So... Suge's girlfriend, Teresa, gives some information to corroborate their theory, Craig Kading's theory, that an individual named Poochie, a mob Piru Blood gang member, had killed Biggie. And so according to this theory, and apparently Teresa said that this was true, that on Suge's orders, while he was in prison, Teresa arranged for the killing of Biggie by Poochie, and the contract was supposedly for $25,000. So $13,000 was to go to Poochie and the rest to Teresa for setting it up.
Can't even like buy a pickup truck for that much anymore.
It just seems like such a piddly amount.
Yeah. I mean,
and that part kind of makes me suspect that there's something off here.
Because mm-hmm. it doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right. And so the investigator, Greg Kading.
I mean, would you do that for that much?
Hell no.
Me neither. So there you go. Solving crimes. Keep going.
So Greg Kading tells the documentary that I was watching with him speaking that after 3 years of hard work, right when his team was on the brink of cracking the case and solving both murders, that they were pulled back by the LAPD. Because according to Kading, he had done just what the LAPD had wanted, which was just to disprove their own from involvement and save them from a $400 million lawsuit, remember, by Biggie's mom.
Because they didn't do their job.
So Greg Kading was pulled as lead investigator. So he said he was right about to crack this case.
He
has info from Keffi naming his nephew as the killer of Tupac. He has information from Suge's girlfriend, Teresa, naming Poochie as the killer of Biggie. So he has names, he has everything, but then he was pulled off the case.
Because that's just enough for them to clear themselves. And if he dug deeper into that information, what would he find?
So this is all according to Greg Kading, though. So let's remember that. We don't know. So I thought, well, why was that corrupt police theory thrown out so quickly by Greg Kading, though? Like, that seems weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it feels like it was.
Because he, on the documentary, was like, I quickly dismissed that. Like, there was no evidence. Like, he kind of, like, just breezed through it. And I'm like, well, I want to know more.
Because the way that the police responded was irregular, wasn't thorough. And whether that be...
And it was the previous investigator that had said that those two people were involved.
And you wouldn't identify people within your own group of police officers. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
They were involved.
So I wanted to dig a little more.
Good. I see why you got, got into this. It's that time. I apologize.
Okay. So what did I dig into?
It was probably really important.
All right. So blah, blah, blah. Let me find this. Okay. So there is maybe a signed affidavit from from Thaddeus Culpepper, the former Death Row Records CEO, who claims Suge Knight was the intended target of the drive-by, not Tupac. Knight had known for many years that this person, Reggie Wright Jr., who I'll tell you more about in a little bit, and Reggie's wife, Sharitha, were behind the murders of Tupac and attempted to murder Knight. And this was all part of... Oh, no, Sharitha is Suge Knight's ex-wife. This was all part of an attempt to gain control over Death Row Records. So that if Suge wasn't divorced yet, and if he died in that hit, then she'd get most everything. So that's another little twist that we could think about, that's out there, that there's actually this signed affidavit. So let's talk about this Reggie Wright Jr. person.
Who is he again?
So he is a former police officer with the LAPD. Okay. No, I haven't really talked about him.
Okay.
So I started learning about him towards the end, and I really was trying to dig in, but I was like, okay, this is where I was like, okay, I have to stop, because it's too many people, too many twists and turns. So
he was
on the Compton police. He was a member of the Compton police, and then he became CEO of Death Row Records.
WTF, mofo, what?
I know, when I learned that, what the fuck is happening? What is happening right now?
Wait, what? Yeah. So the police officer involved in all of this ended up being the...
Well, this is a police officer, yes, that is involved in a lot of things, and was former Compton police, and then became CEO of Death Row Records when Suge went to prison.
No.
So I read an article from 2017, which was all about...
I knew it.
How Reggie Wright Jr. was arrested on drug trafficking charges.
Reggie.
And so it said, in the final days of Suge Knight running Death Row Records, he made a prophetic statement. Quote, this is now the new and untouchable Death Row Records. Unquote. At the time, there was a task force that included the DA's office investigating Death Row Records for drug trafficking and money laundering. Days after Tupac's death, Suge Knight is arrested on the probation violation. All of the investigation ceases when Reggie Wright Jr. takes the helm as CEO of the record label. And the mayor said, there is now no difference between Death Row Records and the Compton police. From that time on, they functioned as one entity.
What does that... No! What does that even mean? And why is that a thing? Are you kidding me? So... Wow.
So there's like Reggie White Jr. and like... There's two of them. Like I think one's the son or the nephew or something.
So clearly involved.
Clearly involved. So
how did how did he get control of the Death Row Records?
I think it was just given to him.
Oh, guilty.
So
that's all you need right there.
Apparently this Reggie Wright Jr. is a suspect in both the Tupac and Biggie murders.
And no
in
shit.
Spite of that, he has been repeatedly covered for by LAPD detective Greg Kading, who also investigated the murders. So this is just one person's point of view, but I found it very enlightening because when I went look at why everything was just tossed away, like this is the article that really like stood out to me as having some juicy bits. So Reggie White Jr.
Like there's no way that's okay.
Well, listen to this. Reggie White Jr. is rumored to have attended the meeting at the sheriff's office where the former lead investigator, Detective Russell Pohl, was laying out his evidence. Remember, because he's the ones that pegged these two cops that he thought were involved. And he was trying to say why those cases should be opened. Mysteriously, Russell Pohl dies in the meeting.
What?
Yeah.
How?
Some kind of like heart attack or brain aneurysm. You know, one of those things that you mysteriously die from. Can't
be explained.
Yeah.
Mm. You mean by the police that report it?
So, I mean, that just struck me as really like, is this real?
It feels like a badly made plot on a TV
and
show.
I looked that up and confirmed in multiple sources. He did die in this meeting. So
okay, so like this dude obviously was involved,
and apparently sheriffs have stonewalled any investigation as to who was actually in the room. But Reggie Wright Jr. released a YouTube interview less than 2 hours after investigator Russell Pohl's death, gloating and revealing salient details of the meeting. So a key piece of evidence in the Tupac murders is a confession letter that claims Wright met with gangs to organize the murder of rapper Tupac Shakur. And that letter was given to Russell Pohl, was given by Russell Pohl to the Los Angeles Police Department's detective Darren Dupree, who was the former partner of Greg Kading. On a radio show, Greg Kading admitted to receiving this evidence from Dupree and leaking the confession letter to protect Reggie White Wright. So why is Greg Kading
protecting anybody?
This guy? Yeah.
And then showing up in Netflix documentaries.
An internal,
get out of here, dude.
Yeah. No, he's like, now he's like positioned himself as the guy that can comment on all of these things. Yeah.
I know what I'm talking about, even though I'm lying.
Yeah, I'm LAPD detective, and I've been involved in these high-profile cases, and so I can speak.
Not so, here, sir.
Yeah. So an internal affairs investigation at LAPD was conducted and buried because of the reach of Reggie Wright Jr. So he's connected. He's got friends in high places. So Phil Carson, who was the only FBI agent to ever investigate the case, believes that Biggie was shot dead by a hitman helped by two crooked LAPD cops. And so Carson said that during his investigation, he noticed vitally important bits of evidence would disappear from the LAPD murder file.
WTF.
And he said, Big Gene, remember Eugene Deal?
Yeah.
Biggie's main bodyguard identified who he thought was a suspect out of a six pack. So that's when there's six pictures. Mm-hmm. And then Carson said the photo with the face that was circled and dated disappeared.
Oh.
And Carson.
Evidence.
So this FBI guy is hopeful that the case will get reinvestigated.
Evidence tampering.
So who killed Biggie? Who killed Tupac? The question remains.
Sounds like a bit of both. But ultimately, the police got paid off well. I mean, in order to end up getting his record label, that's too close to be unrelated.
It's cuckoo.
There's no way. That makes no logical sense unless it was like, we'll give it to you if you cover this up for us.
So just to wrap things up, so where is Suge Knight now? You might ask.
Where's Suge Knight now? I ask.
So remember before when I told you not to look at a video and you looked at it?
Yeah.
Don't look at this video.
Ugh.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just telling you, don't look at it. I looked at it for you. You don't need to look.
Okay.
So Suge Knight.
I learned my lesson. That was a really bad one for me.
Update. Suge Knight was charged with murder, attempted murder, and hit and run after he fled the scene of an altercation in 2015 outside a Compton burger stand. Suge got in a fist fight with Cleobone Sloan, who was a consultant on the Straight Outta Compton movie. And Knight, in his truck, clipped the man with his pickup and then ran over Terry Carter, who is another person involved in the film. He ran over him twice.
Oh my gosh.
It's just brutal to watch it in the video. Don't watch it, people.
Don't watch it. Seriously, the second you brought up the other video, I started having flashbacks thinking about it. I was like, that's the worst way to, like,
this person died from his injuries.
To this day, that Club Fire video, like that whole podcast, that was a 10 out of 10. For deeply disturbing. That has beat every topic we've done at all.
It's so disturbing.
It's the only one that like still triggers me now, like making a fire.
No, and my son was getting the black tiles on the ceiling, the foam for his recording studio. Like, I'm like, are you crazy?
Do you know how fast those catch on fire?
I'm like, you'll be dead in 30 seconds.
30 seconds or less.
Yeah, you won't even be able to take a step.
Bodies piled in the doorway. Like, yeah. Don't watch any videos.
If the flames don't kill you, the choking black smoke will.
Yeah, it's never... It's just...
Yeah.
Take our word for it. Don't watch. Yeah. I didn't, and I learned my lesson.
Yeah, so this is another one. Don't watch the video.
I actually won't. I won't this time.
So, Suge Knight's lawyers tried to claim he acted in self-defense and that he was fleeing the scene from two armed assailants. I didn't see any guns in the video. I mean, it's, you know, it's grainy, you know.
The truck TV. Worked as a weapon, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a very big one. Sherry shared that the one that sticks in her mind the most is the one of the ice pick.
I don't remember that one.
The one lunatic, one ice pick. The
don't fuck with cats.
Yeah, don't fuck with cats guy.
So Suge's in prison, not eligible for parole till 2037.
How old will he be?
He may be dead because he's already older.
That makes sense and probably should happen.
But he may be unfortunately having a pretty sweet life in prison because of his connections.
Yeah. I mean, the first time you run someone over, like, that's really bad. But the second time you run someone over.
No. And I honestly tried to watch it with not look like with my hand sort of over, because I just sort of wanted to like understand the situation. Mm-hmm. But it, you can't. And I saw. So don't look, people. Mm. So I watched Biggie's very last interview, which was just days before he was killed. And he talked about the impact of Tupac's death and talked about wanting to put an end to this beef, you know, all this East Coast, West Coast stuff. And he spoke about the meaning of his upcoming new album, Life After Death, and he said it was all about new beginnings.
Hmm.
This is sad. Just days before he was killed, yeah. So I thought I'd end with, Tupac wrote lots of poems, and so I chose one of his. I'm going into this not knowing what I'll find, but I've decided to follow my heart and abandon my mind. And if there be pain, I know that at least I gave my all, and it's better to have loved and lost than to not love at all. In the morning, I may wake to smile or maybe to cry, but first to those of my past, I must say goodbye.
Hmm.
And that's...
Okay, well,
The unsolved murders of Tupac and Biggie.
I think I've discovered a way to help prevent all of this in the future.
What's that?
I think that the drivers of these cars should be charged the same as the shooter. Then nobody will want to drive the cars that the shooter shoot from.
Oh.
And they're always identified. Ta-da. Done.
Love it.
All right. Well, okay. Until next time. I'm going to say snitches get stitches.
Or ditches.
Snitches get ditches. Dang, that's hardcore.
It's kind of the theme of
my last two
topics.
It's like you don't get hurt. You get like,
dead.
You get dead.
You get dead.
That sucks. Hmm.
I'm going to say until next time.
Don't get dead.
Throw your hands in the air if you're a true player.
What was the California song again?
I don't know the words to that song.
I thought you said that was the one song you knew.
I know it. I don't memorize it. Sorry. I have the music going through my head. I don't know the words.
All right. Until next time, listen to some Tupac.
That's right.
And some Biggie.
Do it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.